People like to believe in fairy tales.
Hello and welcome to episode 142 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemroff, and here is my lone co-host today. It's Angie Han.
Hi.
Christy cannot join us today, but she will be back in action next week. So on the schedule today, we have two movies, while Dewey makes a mess all over my desk. The movies are Jackie, and then we're going to review Nocturnal Animals. So first up, Jackie. Angie, you're introing that one.
Yes. Okay, so here is the IMDb synopsis. Following the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy fights through grief and trauma to regain her faith, console her children, and define her husband's historic legacy. So Jackie is kind of a biopic, except that it's really not about her, it's not about like a large stretch in her life. It literally just takes place over the, it focuses mostly on the few days immediately surrounding JFK's death, and it's more about just kind of how she handles this really traumatic event. Natalie Portman plays Jackie Kennedy with a Jackie Kennedy, well, what I understand is a Jackie Kennedy accent. I can't actually honestly say that I knew what Jackie Kennedy sounded like, and I think that's a part that, like, it took me a little while to get into that, but once I kind of got used to her in that accent, like, this is a really incredible performance by her. It's so raw, it's so, like, emotional, it's really this movie, I found this movie to be so interesting. I feel like you go into biopics with a certain expectation of what they're gonna be like, and you know, every biopic movie I've ever seen always says like, oh, we're not your average biopic, but most of them honestly are. This one actually really does feel different. Like, it's not really about the measure of her life, it's just about this moment. It has a lot to do with kind of, it's the rare biopic that I've seen where someone really considers what their legacy is going to be, and a large part of the focus is on the steps that she takes to ensure that her legacy kind of is written out the way that she would like it to be, while hers and her husband's. I found this to be really fascinating and really unusual. I know that Natalie Portman, I mean, you know, not if you're the kind of person that follows, like, Oscar race conversations, I know that Natalie Portman is being talked about by a lot of people as someone who is probably going to end up being a contender for Best Actress, and I think that it would be well-deserved. What'd you think?
I think I agree with the large majority of what you just said. I don't think I'm as enthusiastic about this movie overall as you came across, but I, at the same time, I do agree with everything you just said. I think I admire the structure of the movie and what it's trying to do more than I actually enjoyed it, if that makes much sense. And
I've been there.
There is no doubt to me that this movie would never have been as good if not for Natalie Portman. And even though this movie was not my favorite movie of the year, I think I might be rooting for her just because of how much I admire when I could see someone elevate a movie to that extent. She is so freaking good. And like you, it's like, I was aware of Jackie Kennedy. I'm aware of, you know, what she did, the legacy she left, but I don't really, you know, we weren't around then. I don't really know the details, and I didn't know how she spoke. I also didn't know how she carried herself during that White House tour. But once I kind of fell into step with that, and especially the way the story is structured in terms of it being nonlinear, I think in this case that was a brilliant decision to make, because for people like us who aren't really looking at it like, oh, is she doing it just like she did in the past, I think you needed that structure to understand, like, how she carried herself and why she ended up the way she did, and why she reacted to the assassination the way she did, and why she reacted to everything she wanted after that way. It's just everything kind of built up layer by layer, and with her performance, I really understood, even though I, you know, for anyone being in that situation, maybe I personally wouldn't have made those same decisions type of thing, I still understood why she made the decision she made, and why she felt what she felt, and That's a really great achievement.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the structure, and it's like a lot of movies, I feel like, you know, they'll use structural trickery to be like, ooh, we're so clever, or like, you know, to hide twists or something. Part of it is that, like, you don't, like, it didn't really register to me how out of order this movie is until we were talking about it just now. Like, you're right. Like, the movie doesn't really tell a linear story, even once, like, not even, it's not even like the flashbacks are in order. Like, it goes back and forth and back and forth. And it really, I didn't think about it. And part of the reason why I think it works so, part of the reason I think it actually works is because it's not trying to trick you. You're not, like, waiting to find out what happens. You already fucking know what happens. I mean, you already, like, this is history and, like, really recent history. So then it really, I think that the way it's structured kind of makes it feel, it's not chronological, but it has a kind of emotional logic to it, has a kind of a rhythm to it that, like, really, you know, kind of carries you through the story in an interesting way, kind of, you know, shows you, like, you start out the movie with an idea of who Jackie Kennedy is and the image that she had and the reputation that she and her husband had. And then, like, as the movie goes on, you just, like, by bouncing back and forth, bit by bit, this really complicated portrait emerges of a woman who is, like, I feel like Jackie Kennedy is kind of remembered as being just this, like, you know, she was, like, very glamorous, and her husband was very glamorous, and people liked them, and that's kind of what, like, as someone who wasn't around during that time, that's kind of just what I knew about them. But you really see the portrait of a woman who was just really, like, savvy, who was really smart, who really, you know, you see someone who struggles with a lot of things, you see someone who, you know, doesn't, like, going out there and waving nicely to everyone doesn't always come easily for her, her marriage doesn't come easily for her, like, you just see, I feel like you start out with a certain image of her, and then because of the way it's structured, as you go on, you just get such a richer and more interesting understanding of her.
And I definitely had that same image of her going in. So the fact that this movie humanized her so much to me, I think that's more of an accomplishment than any movie that, you know, served as a really detailed history lesson that, you know, taught me the expanse of whatever someone had gone through in that way. Just, like, to be able to kind of live in her world and really understand her to that extent. And it's also pretty damn incredible that with that non-linear structure, because most of the time when you have that kind of thing, it's always, you hit that point where it's like, oh, it's time for a flashback.
Right.
And then you cut away in it and you feel it. You realize that's happening. This feels exceptionally natural, where you almost don't even, it's adding up just the way it should in order for her experience to have the impact it should. And that's pretty damn cool.
That's pretty great. And another thing that I thought really set this movie apart is the score. And I'm not someone who really thinks that much about, like, I'm just not a musically inclined person. So it's not something that I think about as much as maybe some other people. But I knew going in that it had a score by Michael Levy, who also did Under the Skin, which is one of my favorite film scores in recent memory, and, like, and a movie that I just was stunned by. So I was very, very excited to hear what she was going to do. And it does add this, like, very unusual flavor to this movie that you
it almost
get from
has like a it's like a haunting quality.
Yeah, exactly.
Like something like that. And just, you know, given what she's going through, and even like how she dresses, you know, she dresses in these bright bold colors, lives in these lavish houses, yet she has so many personal issues and things she's struggling with. When you add that haunting score, it gives it almost like a, I don't want to say a horrific quality, but I don't know. It adds to the fact that I felt so sad for her.
Yeah.
Through much of the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
where she was trying to come out of her shell is not really what I'm trying to convey here, but where she's, like, trying to break out and achieve something and do something, but she can't, you know? It's like just when you're trying to reach for something and you don't want to get up and it's just out of reach. It's like, that's what I felt like she was going through the whole movie.
That's a really good way of putting it. We should wrap up soonish, but before we do, I wanted to also mention Peter Sarsgaard's performance. He plays Bobby Kennedy. And he is, you know, this is very much Jackie's story, but he has a really strong supporting role. And I thought he was really, really good. Like, I thought the two of them had really, really good chemistry. It's clear that the characters are close, but it also really comes through in the way that the actors play their scenes together. Mm-hmm. And I thought that his role was really interesting because it's one of those movies where you can almost kind of see how this entire thing is playing out from his perspective. You also kind of see I feel like he does a lot with a little. Like, you really see the horrible awkward situation he's in, where he's kind of caught between his grieving sister-in-law. You know, he also just lost his brother, so he's also, like, really kind of reeling from that, but he feels kind of protective of her, and he's, at the same time, he's also a politician, so he's like, you see him working a lot of different angles, and I thought that was kind of, it felt almost like its own subplot to me, even though it's kind of woven in and out with Jackie's story, obviously.
No, I agree. I agree with that. I've heard a lot of people say that they thought that he was miscast, and I thought his performance was very good. I can understand where they're coming from, though. It's almost like something I want to call the Peter Sarsgaard effect, where when he's in a movie in a role, you just know it's him. Do you know what I mean? Like, he didn't do anything wrong. It's just, it was hard to look at him and not see Peter Sarsgaard all at the same time.
There are some actors like that. Like, there are some actors where through talent or work or just luck, like, they have a better time disappearing into roles than others. And I can, you know, I really liked him in this, but I can see what you mean. So yeah, we should wrap up. I mean, overall, yeah. Like, I think that this is a really good, really unusual, really exciting movie. I think it's worth watching, and I think that if you're the kind of person who cares about the awards race, you definitely have to watch it, because Natalie Portman is a name that you're going to hear again and again this winter.
Right there with you. Again, I already said it's not my favorite movie of the year. I'm not going to go that far, but this is it's a very good film, and seeing her performance, I think, is kind of vital. So there you have it. That's our discussion on Jackie. Now we're moving on to Nocturnal Animals. Here's the IMDb synopsis. An art gallery owner is haunted by her ex-husband's novel, a violent thriller she interprets as a veiled threat and a symbolic revenge tale. So, yeah, that's pretty accurate. The art gallery owner is played by Amy Adams, and her ex-husband is Jake Gyllenhaal, and speaking of a non-linear format, this is another one where I think it jumps between two timelines very, very well. We are with Amy Adams in, let's just call it the present, and as she reads her husband's manuscript, we jump to, think of a reenactment of sorts. You see the novel playing live, in a way, with Jake Gyllenhaal playing the man at the center of that story.
I would also point out that there's a third timeline, because nested into the reality part of this, where you're actually watching Amy Adams' life, you also see flashbacks of her life before it became what it is. So it's really a movie that's cutting between three different storylines. Mm-hmm.
And another example, like I just said, of something that cuts between different storylines at the perfect possible time. It's, you know, when Amy Adams is reading, imagine me doing air quotes right now, when she is reading it. So when you are actually experiencing what happens in the story, so you see her start to read, something crazy happens in that story that she's reading, and it cuts back to her at the perfect time where when your natural reaction to reading something crazy would be, oh my God, and you jerking back, you cut back to her and she's having that reaction. So something about that combination feels very natural, and it really makes the story more effective. And the same goes for those flashbacks you just mentioned. I think they're dropped in at just the right time, where you learn just enough about who she is, how she's reacting to that story, and what that story means to her beyond it just being a story that he wrote.
Yeah, one of the things that's kind of, funny about this movie is that Jake Gyllenhaal actually plays two completely different characters. One of them is her ex-husband, and then one of them is the main character in the novel. And I feel like one of the things that I really liked about this movie, I don't think it's necessarily the point of the movie, but the way that the flashbacks are kind of cut back and forth, the way that Jake Gyllenhaal is in both of them, and the way that you see imagery in one storyline mirror imagery from another, really kind of made me think of the way that when you're reading a really exciting book and you're just in the middle of it, and so even when you're not reading it, you're going through life and you're kind of thinking about it, and like things that are happening to you remind you of the book, and then when you go back to reading the book, like you bring the things that happened to you during that day like into the book with you, or like even when you're watching a movie or listening to music, if we're both movie fans, you know what I mean? Sometimes you just kind of walk out of a movie and suddenly the world all looks a little bit different. Suddenly everything reminds you of that movie. So I thought that was one thing that this film did incredibly well, is a cut back and forth. Like, you'll see kind of like, for example,
I love how we both describe the experience of this movie as actually reading a book.
Yeah.
You know, that That's just like an extra little element of this that shows just how effective the storytelling is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and he does this, like, in a lot of little ways. Like, you do see kind of her, like, picking up the book and putting it down and stuff like that, but you also, like, one shot I remember from seeing this, I saw it a while ago, actually, but, there's a shot where, like, you see, like, her in a bathtub, and it kind of, like, switches to a shot of him in a bathtub, and they kind of, like, the way it's set up, like, they're kind of, like, mirroring each other. Like, it's just little things like that where just, like, visually he really captures the way that kind of fact and fiction can blend together while you're going through your life, but also experiencing a piece of fiction and how it can kind of inform your life. So I thought that was really interesting.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is another instance where we should probably talk about performances, because there's a couple of them that are great, and they weren't the ones that I thought I was going to come away saying, oh, you should get a nomination or whatever. If Amy Adams gets a nomination this award season, it should be for Arrival, not for this. I'm not saying she's bad in this. I think she's excellent in this. But for me, the three people that stole the show in this movie were Jake Gyllenhaal, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and Michael Shannon.
Yes!
The three of them are really, really damn good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Amy Adams is... This is kind of sold as being Amy Adams' movie, so I was actually surprised to see that she actually probably gets less screen time than Jake Gyllenhaal, because he has two different roles and they're both pretty important. And he does a really... He's, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal, I think, is someone who is one of the most exciting actors of his generation right now. He's, like...
He's so
incredibly good. And he's...
Even when I don't like his movies, I always walk away being like, damn, he is just a really freaking talented actor.
Seriously. So I loved him, but the one that I was really, really shocked by was, like, I knew Michael Shannon was in this, but he doesn't show up until, like, a little while in, and then he just brings this completely different energy to the movie and just immediately turns it into something else, like, and in a good way. Like, it's just, he's just so indelible. Like, he's actually... I don't want to say comic relief, because he's not really, like, it's not that he's like, oh, ha 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 ha, he's there to be funny, like, he's not goofy, but he does just kind of, like, you're, like, watching this, like, really, you know, like, dark, almost, like, sexy, but icy, like, you know, Amy Adams life thing, and then you're watching this, like, really, like, dark, twisted thriller and with Jake Gyllenhaal, and then, like, Michael Shannon just comes in, like, breezes in, he's, like, a Texas lawman who's kind of just, like, you know, he's, like, the consummate, like, straight shooter. He's, like, kind of dry to the point that it is actually kind of funny when you're watching it. And he's so, like, matter-of-fact. And it's just, yeah, like, I did not expect that I was going to walk out of this being like, holy shit, Michael Shannon.
The movie needed him. The movie needs a character like that, because there's some material in here that's pretty damn disturbing and tough to watch. So not that a character like Michael Shannon makes light of this situation, but he does bring just enough levity to the movie that you're kind of not wallowing in the horror and the sadness of what happens. But thinking of another movie that's fresh in my brain, because I finally watched it for the first time, Michael Shannon in this movie reminds me quite a bit of Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water, where it's, you know, just because, like, they're the cops, and it's an intense situation, and they bring just the right amount of levity for that specific movie, you know?
I haven't seen Hell or High Water.
Really? No. Oh my god. You put that on the top of your list. Anyway, before we get off track, Aaron Taylor-Johnson is freaking creepy in this.
Oh, he's so terrifying.
He is just evil, and he's so good at playing evil. It is deeply disturbing.
It makes me wonder why, like, nobody before, like, I'm like, why has he not been cast in as, like, every villain in every movie? He's so good. Like, he's got one of those, like, really physical performances where just, like, when he's not even talking, just the way he, like, leans towards someone or looks at them, like, you already kind of get, like, this chill down your spine, because it's so fucking,
like,
creepy.
He's, like, naturally, like, skeezy, you know?
Yeah, oh, it works
so
great.
If you passed him anywhere, you would only have to give him, like, the slightest glance to know, don't go near that guy.
Yes, that's the guy that you kind of, you know, when you're, like, walking around and you see someone, you're like, I don't really know what it is about that person, but I'm definitely gonna, like, walk around them. I know I don't want to. He gives off that kind of vibe so well. But I will say that, like, the one thing I wasn't, you know, I like this movie a lot, but the one thing is that it kind of left me feeling a little, like, you know, at the end I was like, that was fun, that was really pretty, it's really well acted. what does it really mean? Like, what does it have to say? And maybe that's not, you know, like, I feel like it's really entertaining and exciting and, you know, all that. But I left very slightly disappointed because I was waiting for something more, you know, some kind of deeper meaning or deeper message to reveal itself. And I didn't feel like it really had anything that interesting to say. What do you think?
I hear you.
Should we go into spoilers to talk about that? Or?
That's, yeah. Briefly before we do get there, I think that is a totally accurate description of how the movie leaves off. Because I can't really think of a good answer for you, you know? Mm-hmm. But where the movie left off, I'm trying to fit to place my words without spoiling, but I found where Amy Adams is left at the end of this movie so just, like, I don't know how to describe it in proper, like, criticky terms, but it was messed up. It was just messed up. And I was so taken aback by what had happened to her. It just made what happened in the movie, over the course of the movie, so much more screwed up to me.
Huh.
You know,
okay.
Because, like, when you're thinking about it, because it's supposed to be, you know, just like a fictional narrative, and then it takes on this new meaning. I don't know. All right. Let's give brief recommendations for or against Nocturnal Animals before we roll into spoilers. Would you recommend our listeners check this movie out?
Yes. I wouldn't necessarily say go in expecting anything really deep, but it's really entertaining. It's really well acted. It's really well done. And it's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm right there. I think this is probably one of my favorite movies of the year. It's definitely flirting with the bottom of my top 10 at the moment. I was really struck by it, largely because of the ending. So, briefly, let's talk spoilers. Spoilers for Nocturnal Animals. If you don't want to hear these, then goodbye. We love you. We'll see you next week. All right, do you want to kick this off?
No, actually, it sounded like you had a lot to say about the spoiler. You should get started. So
the stuff that happens in his manuscript is completely fucked up, disturbing, hard to watch, very sad, all of that. But, you know, when you take a step back and you realize that he wrote like a fictional narrative for her to read, and then it's like he made her wallow in all that and then left her with the hope that he was gonna meet her at the end. And it's all, like, he just left her to sit and stew with this miserable story that he forced her to put herself in. It's like, I picture Nocturnal Animals as in the manuscript he wrote. I picture that being her prison or, like, her hell as his way to get back at her, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like, it's unquestionably a tale of revenge, but I just didn't think that it was, like, I was just like, oh, okay, it's a punch in the gut, but I was just like, okay, so her husband is bitter, apparently, and he's written this thing, and she read it, and she was like, wow, this is so good, I'm into you again, and then he's like, haha, never, it's like, just kidding, bitch, and I was just like, that's okay, I mean, I didn't think
see,
it was that.
I'll add to her reaction that I got from her performance that she was deeply disturbed by the story.
Oh, she was,
too.
Yeah.
She was as haunted and as uncomfortable by what happened in that story as I was. So it's that to me is like an actual punch to the gut, but without being some sort of, like, physical act of revenge.
Yes.
Which I haven't really seen in a movie. And maybe even, you know, a physical retaliation isn't as effective as what he did to her head, you know? It's like I looked at her sitting at that table by herself at the end of the movie, and I pictured her there being upset that she's all alone and she was stood up, while also having to suffer with the imagery that he just put in her head.
Huh. I guess I don't disagree with you. It just, when I was there, like, I was like, I get what the ending is going for, but it didn't hit me as much emotionally. One kind of interesting thing about the ending, though, is that, like, so the manuscript also ends with someone getting their revenge. It ends with the Jake Gyllenhaal character trying to get his revenge. And doesn't he, like, hurt himself in that process? Like, physically?
Well,
he, like, shoots himself.
Well, that's the other... Well, he doesn't survive. That's the other part that I find, I guess, intriguing or interesting about this movie is that even though he technically gets his revenge, as in real Jake Gyllenhaal, it's almost like he's never gonna win, you know? Like, he still lost his child, and they're just in such a dark, unhappy place at the end where he did get his revenge, but he's still not getting what he would have wanted out of it, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Like, he's still not winning, in a sense.
Yeah.
And you could see that in the fictional story. You could see that in the real-life portion of the movie. I just loved how that was woven together.
Yeah, all right, okay. I can see that. I think that, for whatever reason, it just didn't strike a chord with me as much emotionally as it did for you, but I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you're saying. Like, I thought that it was a really...
This is such a nice episode. It's like, we're like, oh, well, I didn't love it as much as you, but I agree with what you're saying. Your opinion is valid.
It's because we only scream at each other when Chrissy's around, so let's blame that all on
Chrissy.
I know,
really.
But yeah, I did think...
we'll bottle it all up for next
yes.
week.
I did like kind of the twist of, like, it ends up being a revenge thriller where ultimately the ultimate act of revenge committed is completely non-violent. Like, physically, nothing bad happens to anyone in "quote unquote" real life in this movie.
That has a whole lot of violence
yes,
in it, though.
It's all just like emotional betrayal with like the kind of, you know, "quote unquote" fictional violence standing in as a replacement for that.
Which is the coolest thing, because in the actual manuscript, it's like all the actual disgusting violence that takes place, oddly enough, slightly pales in comparison to the emotional, manipulative, mental revenge he enacted on her in the real life narrative. I find it so interesting to compare the two, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I think that's it. So yeah, we both recommend both Jackie and Nocturnal Animals. You got two good ones this weekend. Lucky you guys. Thank you so much for listening. You guys know where to find us. We are on iTunes, where you can rate, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. Please like us on Facebook and talk to us on Twitter, at popcornprosecco. And then both of us are all over the internet. Also, Angie, do you want to go first? Because Chrissy's not here.
I can do Chrissy's after mine. But first, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com. And you can find, and Chrissy writes all over the web, but you can find her career highlights at
decadentcriminals.com.
And you can find her on them. Twitter at Chrissy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. That's pretty good.
That's very good. You did a great, Chrissy. All right, you guys can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemroff. I write for Collider.com, and I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. That's all we got for you this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Do you ever feel like your life has turned into something you never intended?